You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. Plenty to be talking about over the next hour. Coming up, we'll be looking, continue to look back at all the Premier League action from last weekend and also looking ahead to this weekend's action. As well as that, we're going to be talking about a number of the Carabao Cup ties coming up tonight and then tomorrow night. Some pretty tasty ones in action tomorrow night as Liverpool take on Arsenal and Chelsea play against Manchester United. Our focus this afternoon will be on Manchester City and Manchester United, so covering both sides of Manchester, as well as going to the South Coast to talking all things Bournemouth. Bournemouth, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. It's the Premier League Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty to talk about over the next hour. As I said, if you want to share your views on your Premier League club, get in contact with us this afternoon. This hour, every single weekday, is dedicated to solely Premier League chat. So if you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. Or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We want to hear from you this afternoon. Obviously, a number of Carabao Cup fixtures coming up tonight. We mentioned some of the ones that come up tomorrow night. But tonight's fixtures, Burton take on Leicester, who obviously are in a pretty confident mood after hitting 9 past Southampton last Friday. Crawley take on Colchester. The opportunity for one of those sides to get into the next round, a pretty good opportunity for both those teams. Everton take on Watford in the Marco Silva Derby. Manchester City host Southampton. I mean, couldn't really get a whole lot worse for Southampton. One of the sides that you would least like to face, having just been battered by 9-0, and Manchester City twice in the space of a week away from home. So Southampton fans may be dreading that game of the Etihad tonight. I wonder how many Saints fans will be making the trip up to Manchester tonight. And then Oxford United take on Sunderland. Those are all Carabao Cup fixtures that are taking place tonight. As I said, two blockbuster fixtures tomorrow night. See Liverpool host Arsenal and Chelsea take on Manchester United. One of the sides in action tonight in the Carabao Cup is Leicester. Obviously, they are bouncing, really. They're pretty confident at the moment after winning 9-0 at Southampton. Yes, 9-0 on Friday night. It went from bad to worse for Southampton, but for Leicester and Brendan Rodgers, it was a pretty good evening. And you'd think, even if they make quite a lot of changes, which is expected, that they will probably still quite easily win tonight away at Burton. And earlier on The Breakfast Show with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie, they were joined by the former Leicester winger, Matt Piper. They were talking all things Leicester and how confident they will be after that drubbing on Friday night.
It's a young squad as well. And, you know, if you've listened to what Brendan said recently, especially playing against the top teams, Man United, Liverpool, he said we just lacked that little bit of belief to go on and, you know, really impose ourselves on the game. Because that squad is literally littered with youngsters, and I think if they do get that belief, and you're right, a result like that can breed more belief in the squad. If they do get that belief, they really can go on to do something special this season, I think.
Is that why someone like a Johnny Evans figure is so important, actually? Because he does provide that level of experience, that level of knowledge. And yeah, I suppose that belief that can come with it.
Yeah, I think he's massive. He's massive for the team. Himself, Schmeichel, Vardy. You know, the great thing about the team this season is the mix of experience and youth and that excitement that the youth are bringing to the squad. I mean, literally, Harvey Barnes, James Maddison. James Maddison actually sat a little bit deeper. It was unusual for him. Normally, he plays that 10 position. He sat deeper in that game for some reason, and he really dictated play on a level that I've not seen for a while in the Premier League. I mean, you've got your Kevin De Bruyne's, you've got your David Silva's. I'm not putting him on that level yet, but the boy really is a special talent. You know, someone who can control the pace of a football match, and he really did dictate play from deeper in the park.
Of course, we've recently had the anniversary of the death of your owner, and there's a tribute garden that's opened in Vichai's honour last week, and I believe you visited this.
I did. I went down on Sunday when it opened, and it was just beautiful. Mm. That's the only word that I have for it. So tranquil, peaceful, because it's not far. It's obviously right near the stadium, but it's quite a busy area around, you know, where the crash site was. And the fact that I was talking to staff there, the club actually gave it the green light to go ahead 23 days before it was complete on that Sunday.
Oh, wow.
So it was more like a DIY SOS. I think some of the gardening teams from Leicester that did help out with it have been on that program.
Right.
So they've had that kind of experience before to put it together so quickly. But, you know, it's just how the club have been, you know, ever since we lost Kundishai. They've done everything with, you know, quality, class, and that garden. It's just beautiful. Not just for Vichai, it's for the four other people as well that sadly lost their lives a year ago.
Yeah, look, exactly. And actually, I read an article yesterday about the fact that it's weird how these things work out. Prince William, Kate, and both their children were due to be flying on that helicopter about 2 weeks after it crashed. They were really booked on to fly around with him. And I mean, it's just when you hear some stories like that as well, and you think, I mean, obviously it was terrible, don't get me wrong, but you know, you add that into the mix as well, and it's like, wow, it was. I remember when it came in, the news that came in, I was sat in here in the office, and it was like, wow. It was just a really staggering experience. But that's the point that you touched on there about Leicester, which is that, ever since that tragedy happened, I think it's how you respond to tragedies, isn't it, that says a lot about you and about the football club. And it has just been handled with class since literally the second that it happened. And is that something that for you sets Leicester apart maybe from some other football clubs, just in the kind of feel of the place and the ethics of the place almost?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I was, you know, ever since I've been at the club, I've been there since I was 8 years old. And, you know, it's always had that feel, especially with the staff of Leicester City. But obviously when the King Power Group came in, Convici, Kuntop, and sort of, you know, they took over the football club, that did even raise again. They are really special people. And, you know, the chief executive, Susan Whelan, she really lets that flow throughout the club, the community. They're helping the local hospitals, universities. Everyone sees in the nationals how we get, you know, presence on seats and things like that. Just them little added touches that, you know, football owners, it's unheard of, to be honest. And they're just special people. And that's why it was such a tragic loss when it happened, and the people of Leicester felt it so much.
Exactly. Just moving on from that now, and just have a quick chat about Brendan Rodgers, really, because we've spoken about the quality of the players, we've spoken about that mixture of youth and experience, but what has Brendan added to this, do you think?
Well, I still talk to a lot of people at the club, and it's not just, you know, the players that he's working with. It was his whole attitude when he came in. And when you hear some of the stories, it's very similar. I can make comparisons to it with when Jose Mourinho first came into Chelsea. Mm. And he sort of had that winning mentality, and he came in and he let it, you know, breathe throughout the whole staff, the whole club. And that seems to me is what's happening at the minute at Leicester. You know, I got a good feeling at the end of last season towards the end of last season. They didn't win every game, but he was a big presence on the side of the pitch. And even what I loved about Friday night against Southampton, he'd never left his technical area once. He was there, he was driving the team from the side. Because some managers, when it goes 3-4 and they think the game's won, they go and sit back on the bench, have a cup of tea, put their feet up, just tell the team to close the shop down now. We've done what we came here to do. Not him. He was at the side of the pitch, really driving the performance. And you mentioned Johnny Evans earlier. He was actually, you know, really wanting to beat that Premier League record of Man United's 9-0. When he got to 5 and 6, he was saying to Vardy and the rest of the team, we can get the record tonight. And he was annoyed when Maddison stuck that one in the top corner from his free kick, and he went and celebrated because he told the lads at half-time, no celebrating goals, just get back, we want that record.
Wow.
And the team are really pushing this season. I think they really do want that top four, and hopefully they'll start to believe it.
Yeah, well, it seems like the mentality's spot on, and I guess that then leads on to tonight's game, which could be a potential banana skin. I'm sure that Brendan Rodgers will make changes, of course, being the Carabao Cup, but you would feel that they'll have enough to get past Burton?
I think so. He definitely will make changes tonight. He normally does leave in a couple of, you know, first 11 players. He's done it in the last few rounds, and Didi, Vardy even on occasion. Maybe a Johnny Evans or a Soyuncu. He still leaves a little bit of experience in there, but he will play some of those fringe players. But unfortunately for Burton, those fringe players would probably get into a lot of other Premier League sides. The squad's that good at the minute, and it's that deep. So on paper, you would suggest that Leicester will win it and go through to the quarterfinals, but you never know in the cup, do you?
No, exactly. And look, I know a lot's being made of the likes of Maddison and links elsewhere and things. And obviously Harry Maguire did decide to make that move over the summer. I'm looking at it now, you know, and this is coming from a Manchester United fan. Like, if I'm James Maddison, do I leave Leicester for Manchester United, really? What do you reckon?
Well, I spoke about this last night on the radio, and someone else posed the same question. And for me, the manager that you've got, the club that you're at, I've just told you the history of the club in recent years and how good it is and what a place it is to be. I think you've got a manager in Brendan Rodgers that really can develop young talent. And I would be looking at him, if I was James Maddison, and thinking, I'm staying with this manager for another year or two, really get to the top of my game, because he's the guy that can get me there. So Man United, under Solskjaer, you know, he started to pick up of late, but will it last? I don't know. I just think Leicester's a great club to be at, especially if you're a youngster trying to develop and push on further in your career.
I just want to ask you, I suppose, lastly, on Maddison, also on Harvey Barnes, because two players that, are they ready for England, first and foremost? Obviously, with Maddison, the whole casino incident, whether that was blown out of proportion, should he get his chance at national level?
I think he should. That casino incident was just, I thought it was just silly. When I read it, I thought, well, people are trying to pull him down a little bit. But, you know, I see him week in, week out, and he is literally on the levels of, you know, he's the best, one of the best around English youngsters, without doubt. Him, Mason Mount, quite similar. I think Mason Mount's a little bit quicker, but I think Maddison's a little bit cuter with how he goes about his work. You know, the trouble I see with Maddison in the international side is that his best position, for me, is the 10. Mm. And we all know that Gareth Southgate doesn't really play a system that fits a 10 in it. So that's the only stumbling block moving forward, because when Brendan Rodgers plays him out on the left sometimes, he hasn't got that pace. So for me, it makes him a little more predictable, because he always has to come inside the fullback. But, you know, Harvey Barnes as well, I coached him from, I was at Leicester for 3 years coaching when he was 11, 12, 13, always a special talent, always very quick, direct. And he's going to be a big player. I don't think quite England international call-up yet, But if he keeps putting the performances in like he did Friday night, then he's not too far away.
Love Sport. This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 70 25 58 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to be talking all things Manchester City now, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Ian Cheeseman from the Forever Blue podcast. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Ian. It was a 3-0 home win on the weekend against Aston Villa. City had to be patient. They didn't score in the first half, but was there that sense of inevitability that at some point City were going to break through and then from there the floodgates would start to open?
Yeah, it's inevitable at the moment. Thanks for having me on, Kieran. It's inevitable that City will create a goal, although that said, in the last home game against Wolves, clearly they didn't. And that was the reason why they didn't get anything out of that game against Wolves. But generally speaking, the creativity within the City team is exceptional. So when they're all playing well, they're all moving well, they're all zipping the ball about as we know they can, it just seems to be a matter of time as to when a goal will come. So they did it. Defensively, it's a slightly different issue. While they're playing, and I suppose this sounds very disrespectful to teams like Aston Villa, and clearly Wolves don't fall into that category because they beat them. But generally speaking, I would say that if they're playing one of the lesser teams in the Premier League, which Aston Villa at the moment and Southampton, who City play tonight and then at the weekend, fall into that category. Their dominance in possession, their dominance in creativity, attacking, usually is enough. But at the back, there are still slight concerns and issues there for when they play Liverpool a week on Sunday. So for the big games, that's an issue that's still probably to be resolved.
Looking at the team selection for Saturday's game in defence, at fullback, João Cancelo started at right back, Benjamin Mendy at left back. On the face of it, I think that's probably City's best fullback duo, quite considerably, actually. What's your view on the fullback situation? Obviously, Zinchenko has now been ruled out for a little while after having surgery. Where are you at in terms of who should be City's starting fullbacks on a weekly basis?
Well, it's interesting because we had that debate on the Forever Blue podcast last night, and the first person I spoke to, the three panelists, went for Kyle Walker. The second one agreed, but then somehow in his own conversation ended up going back with Cancelo. And I personally am starting to think that Cancelo's the person as much as anything, because Pep's team plays possession football. It's all about keeping the ball, controlling the ball, not giving it away. Obviously more to it than that, but that is a key part of it. And Cancelo is perfect at that, whereas Kyle Walker, as much as he has terrific pace and a lot of assets, I'm not in any way being negative here about Kyle Walker. One of the slight weaknesses he's got is he does have a tendency to give possession away because he tries to run forward, he tries to create things, and then the team loses possession. And I think ultimately, in the long run, the reason why Pep's brought Cancelo in is because he wants a player, particularly in the top games, particularly against the European opposition, the latter stage of the Champions League, and in the fixtures against Liverpool and Arsenal and Chelsea, and the sort of big games of the season, that they want a player that they can trust who will keep possession. So whilst Walker isn't ruled out of it yet and will play in a lot of games, he might play tonight, for example, in the Carabao Cup, and then maybe again at the weekend against Southampton. But if I had to talk about who would be the choice, I think at the moment, of Pep and me and probably a growing number of City fans for the Liverpool game, then it would be Cancelo, because of the more natural tendency for him to not want to give possession away.
It's also intriguing to see that up front in the kind of centre-forward position, Gabriel Jesus has seemingly overtaken Sergio Aguero a little bit. Is that just a case of Guardiola continuing to push this squad, that he wants to perhaps re-energise, re-motivate Aguero to say, you're not guaranteed, you may be one of the best Premier League strikers of all time, but you're not guaranteed a place in this side? Or is this a sign of what's going to come? And obviously at some point City do have to think about kind of an era post Aguero, and actually Jesus is being modelled into that, the next man off the rank behind Aguero.
Well, I think everything you've said there is valid. Jesus was given the nod ahead of Aguero a couple of years ago, you might remember, and got a little bit of a run in the team, and Aguero responded and suddenly became the recognised number one again. So it did have that effect on him, and Aguero's become a lot more involved in the build-up and the passing and all the rest of it that perhaps wasn't a natural part of his game before Pep came on the scene. At the moment, I think it's a combination of the different factors you've just alluded to. Aguero's getting a little older, and he's already said, Pep, that David Silva is not a player now who he thinks is capable or wants to play every 3 days. So you will see that David Silva, at the moment anyway, is playing in the league games at the weekend, but not in whatever cup ties there are in midweek. So he won't be involved tonight, and I don't think he might. He might not even be involved at the return game at Atalanta next midweek because they want to sort of spread him out. And I think that might be the case now with Aguero, that Aguero playing in every single game, as he did towards the end of last season, for example, and in lots of the big games that City have played over the last 2 or 3 years, I think you'll see a lot more fluctuation between the two of them. And Jesus is younger, he's a lot more mobile. He is clearly a very, very talented footballer. His goals record is phenomenal, actually, if you analyse it in terms of minutes and games played and how many goals he scores. He still is feels sometimes a little bit raw in terms of he misses chances that he really should be putting away. But ultimately, Pep's got to be thinking about the long run. But again, if you come to the Liverpool game a week on Sunday, I'd be surprised if Aguero isn't the first choice. So when you say, you know, has Jesus overtaken him, I think in the really big, important games that Pep has to get a result from, my guess is that he would still, assuming that everybody's fully fit, of course, that he would still go with Aguero. And don't forget, there was one other little issue in there. Aguero came back from Argentina duty, an international break, with the Argentina coach saying that Aguero had been carrying a slight heel injury. So they might be managing that a little bit, and that might be part of the reason why seen a little bit more rotation, a little bit more from Jesus.
Another goal on the weekend for Raheem Sterling. A lot of people waxing lyrical about how good Sterling is now. In your view, Ian, whereabouts in world football does he rank? Because people have been giving their different views, whether he's a top three player, top five player in the world, top 10 player in the world. And also, in your view, in terms of City squad, is he now the most important player? Because I think, I'd assume, 12 months ago, I'm assuming a lot of City fans pretty much would have said De Bruyne, but is that not as simple now? Are they perhaps edging towards Sterling being City's most integral player?
Well, I think the secret of Pep's City team is that it isn't about an individual. I mean, I understand the question and the reason for asking it, and it's always worth debating anyway, isn't it? You know, it's good fun. But I think the strength of City is the fact that they have got a number of players that were only a whisker apart in terms of their quality and their influence on the game. So Kevin De Bruyne, David Silva, Bernardo Silva. At the moment, Gundogan is playing very well. I think Fernandinho, who's been playing, of course, in a different role this season, is also a crucial player. There are several of them. Raheem Sterling clearly comes into that upper echelon of influential players. And yeah, there's an argument to say at the moment he's the single most important player because statistically he's got more goals than anybody else. He's involved in a lot of the goals. His work rate has improved considerably. He tracks back well. There's nothing much you can say negative about him, although in my personal opinion, I think he's more effective on the right-hand side or as a floater rather than anchored out on the left, which is the way he's been recently because of the absence of Sane and the attempts to get Bernardo Silva or Riyad Mahrez into the team. It tends to be that Sterling plays out on the left. But wherever he plays, he's a very inventive player and a joy to watch, really. And that's as important as anything to me.
Looking ahead then to City's next game, it is tonight in the Carabao Cup, hosting Southampton, who shipped 9 goals on Friday night. Pep Guardiola said he's expecting a reaction from the Saints tonight. Is that just him playing the politics of football and not wanting to sound disrespectful to Southampton? Or is there a little bit of concern? I assume there probably isn't for a lot of Manchester City fans going into this game because City could play a second-string side and it would still be full of international talent. So is there any slight bit of concern going into this game that Southampton will perhaps feel like they owe their fans as much as anyone a reaction tonight?
Well, it's funny because as well as doing the podcast, I do a match day vlog, which is on YouTube. And I talked to some City fans after the game at the weekend, and sort of slightly threw ahead to the upcoming visits of Southampton. And the first person I spoke to said, well, you know, you wouldn't expect me to say anything different because, you know, it could be typical City, the one game you expect them to absolutely thrash the opposition because they've just lost at home by 9-0, is the one they slip up in. There is that sort of black humour that City fans have carried from the days when they were down in the third tier of English football, and it's still there in a lot of the older, particularly City supporters. My reaction when I saw that Southampton had been beaten 9-0 at home by Leicester was not so much the typical City could return, because yes, you're right, City's second squad is fantastic, and we will see people like Phil Foden playing tonight. I mean, Riyad Mahrez will start, Bravo will start in goal. Hardly what you'd call second-class players. Eric Garcia and Taylor Harwood-Bellis, who are very exciting young defenders, will probably play as well. So that second team is capable of winning. But the one thing I did think straight away, as soon as you lost 9-0, is any team that gets beat like that so heavily goes into the next game and our next games thinking the last thing we want to do is ship that number of goals again. They're playing against City at the Etihad twice in succession. It's the league game at the weekend. We have to have a very strong defence. Now, I still think City will beat Southampton twice, but I certainly don't expect 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I can see it being a lot tighter and Southampton throwing everybody behind the ball. And if they come away with 2-0 defeats, they'll feel probably, it sounds a bit patronising, but the way City are at the moment, that I would, if I was a Southampton fan, I'd come away from that thinking, well, actually, that's a big improvement on the way we played against Leicester. So I expect the scores to be a lot more respectable in the two games, but I'd still expect City to win both games as well.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Ian. That was Ian Cheeseman from the Forever Blue podcast. Looking ahead to that Carabao Cup tie tonight. Manchester City are at home against Southampton. I think, if anything, Ian's perhaps being a bit diplomatic there. I don't think there are many people out there that, if you're asking for a prediction for tonight, thinking it's going to be a tight game. I think Southampton could be on the receiving end yet again, because one, I don't see Southampton putting out a full-strength side tonight. And two, even if City makes 6, 7, 8 changes like we expect them to tonight, you think of the quality that they have, in particular in forward areas. Defensively, I think Southampton can get at City tonight. But you look in an attacking sense that you can bring the likes of Phil Foden into the side. Sergio Aguero didn't start on the weekend. It is remarkable some of the players that City can bring into the side that didn't even start on the weekend. So I think Ian perhaps not wanting to rub it in too much to Southampton fans, but I think it will be another tough evening for Southampton tonight. And then let's say Southampton do get battered again tonight. Well, they can look forward to potentially another battering against the same opposition on the weekend. So potentially not the greatest time to be a Southampton fan. Still remember that story from Friday night of that young kid that was taken to his first game 4 hours in the driving rain to see his side lose 9-0 in his first game. Not exactly the greatest first experience, but as the song goes, things can only get better from there, because, having said that, I mean, what's the likelihood City could break a record and get double figures? Who knows? If you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're going to talk about the other side of Manchester later in the hour, but up next, we'll be going on to the South Coast, another South Coast side, and talking all things Bournemouth next.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. As I mentioned, we're going to go on to the South Coast now and talk all things Bournemouth. And I'm delighted to say we are joined by Tom Crocker, sports reporter for the Bournemouth Echo. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Tom. It was a 0-0 draw away at Watford on the weekend. Consecutive clean sheets, but consecutive 0-0 draws. So what's your reaction to the weekend's game and then the previous weekend's game? Is it kind of a positive that Bournemouth are now perhaps defensively looking a little bit better, or are there concerns starting to grow that the goals are drying up for Bournemouth?
Yeah, I think obviously being such an attacking team, it's when the goals stop flowing, it's a little bit of a worry. I think they're generally more focused towards trying to score goals than the clean sheets, although that was the first clean sheet of the season against Norwich. That was much needed, but it's 3 games in a row now without scoring if you go back to the Arsenal game as well. So that is obviously a bit of a concern. I think both the 0-0s are quite different games, really. I mean, the Norwich one was such a poor game all round, really, in terms of chances for both sides. There's only really one or two for each side. So I think a point apiece was pretty much fair, but the weekend against Watford, difficult conditions up there, but it was, yeah, they created chances and Ben Foster had a good game in goal and things just didn't quite work out for them. So, I mean, they're still, I think that's more positive to take out of the Watford one in terms of they had chances and probably should have scored a couple of goals there. But the negative, I think they played Watford and Norwich, the two bottom sides in the league, and only picked up 2 points, which I think they would have targeted a few more than that. So it's not really a concern just yet, but it's a slight disappointment that they couldn't pick up 2 points really. But luckily they've got their first clean sheet now. I think that was needed after some of the defending earlier on in the season.
Eddie Howe said after the game that we don't normally struggle to score, but today at least we did not struggle to create chances. So one of the things I wanted to point out was how one of the players that was a real star for Bournemouth last season, David Brooks, is still out injured. How much do you think Bournemouth are missing him? Or do you think actually Bournemouth have a squad now and the forward options available to Eddie Howe that his absence isn't felt as much as perhaps it would have been a couple of years ago?
I think he's a massive miss still. I think, like I say, the squad is a lot stronger now, but the players who are in the team, in terms of the attacking players, haven't quite delivered in the last few weeks. That's been the biggest problem, really. I mean, in terms of personnel, they've still got plenty of great options. Like you say, Fraser and Harry Wilson played. Harry Wilson came on at the weekend. Dan Juma, the new signing, played and missed a good chance. And Josh King and Callum Wilson haven't scored for a few weeks. So in terms of personnel, there's still plenty of attacking threat there without David Brooks. But I think he offers just something completely different. And I fully expect when he's back fit again, which should hopefully be some point in November, hopefully back on the pitch, and I think he'll go straight back into the team when he is fixed. He's offered something, like I say, completely different. It was so good last season, and I think there's a lot of hope and expectation from the Bournemouth fans when he's fit and comes back into the team. They'll suddenly look a bit more flowing going forwards, hopefully. So, in terms of, they can still go into games and get results without him, but I think he'll be a massive boost when he is back fit again.
A good bit of positive news off the field for Bournemouth just a week or so ago was the news that Aaron Ramsdale had signed a new long-term contract to the club. Obviously, he's currently the starting goalkeeper for the England under-21s as well. Have you been surprised by his rise, really? Because it was a real struggle, the goalkeeping position, last season and even the season before for Bournemouth. Eddie Howe perhaps not really knowing who his number one is. So are you a little bit surprised that at this point in his career, he's now kind of forged his way, not just as Bournemouth's number one, but also as the England under-21's number one?
I think everyone's a little bit surprised, if they're being honest. He's obviously in League One at Wimbledon on loan last season, and he came back in pre-season. There was four keepers, and at the start of pre-season, I don't think Eddie Howe really knew who the number one was, even as far as a few months ago. So, yeah, in pre-season, he performed really well, didn't concede a goal in his games that he got in pre-season, and shone there and got his first chance in the first game of the Premier League season, and I think he got man of the match in that game against Sheffield United and played really well, and he's kept his position ever since and deservedly so. Like you say, he's got like a new contract now, and goalkeeping situation is an interesting one really, because we've got Mark Travers as well, who played at the end of last season. He's just signed a new contract as well, and he's still a young goalkeeper. So yeah, there's a couple of really talented guys there, but Ramsdale in particular, yeah, he just looks so composed on the ball and just doesn't really look out of place at all. And come into the Premier League having only really played the League One, he hasn't really played Championship games either, so to make that big jump up, and I think he can't be too far away from knocking on the door towards the senior England squad if he carries on the way he's going. Like I say, first choice in the 21s and first choice in the Premier League for a Premier League side, he's performed really well this season, arguably been Bournemouth's best player so far, which is a real credit to him and the work he's done and the rise he's had in the last few months.
One man that's getting quite a few starts at the moment for Bournemouth is left-back Diego Rico. Obviously, Charlie Daniels is out with another injury. He was a man that kind of struggled, really, to adjust to the Premier League, struggled to get into the Bournemouth side last season. What have you made of his performances this season? And if it is a kind of a positive sign for Bournemouth, does that just highlight how you shouldn't just discard players after 3 or 4 months just because in their third season they don't necessarily get right up to speed? That if you just have a little bit more patience, and that's what Eddie Howe has shown, you start to reap the rewards of it in the second season.
Yeah, I think it's something Eddie spoke about. He took a little bit of time to settle last season. He came over from Spain and sort of learning the language, learning the Premier League football was a challenge for him. But he sort of, in the last few weeks, he's sort of particularly grown into that role. He's taken the opportunity, and like I say, Charlie Daniels unfortunately went down again, and he's come in, and it says a lot really. I think the sort of third or fourth game of the season that he opted for Nathan Ackett left back instead of him, so he's sort of won that place back now. And ever since they signed Lloyd Kelly in the summer, and since he's been fit, Diego Rico seems to have stepped up his performances, and I think that's no real coincidence that now there's a real battle at left back between those two, and he's kept the spot for the last few weeks and been playing really well. And sort of he has sort of still have a few moments defensively where you worry a little bit. His set piece delivery has been fantastic, and the way he's been playing and defending, he's starting to become a real sort of fan's favourite, which, like you say, is not something we've already expected kind of start of the season, considering the way last season didn't quite go maybe as he would have wanted to. But yeah, I think he came for a relatively big fee in terms of Bournemouth, the sort of fees that they pay. So the way he's adapted this season, he's starting to pay back that fee a little bit now, and at the moment is one of the first names on the team sheet in recent weeks. He's played sort of 5 or 6 games in a row and really seems to be improving every week, which is obviously a great sign for Eddie and for the squad.
So no Carabao Cup tie for Bournemouth this week. So up next, it is in the Premier League on Saturday lunchtime at home against Manchester United. These, I assume, are the games that, even though Manchester United are not what they were under Sir Alex Ferguson, these are still the types of games that Bournemouth fans absolutely relish. And I'm assuming one game that, even though Manchester United had a good result on the weekend, it's a game that Bournemouth will look at and Bournemouth fans will look at and think that they've got a really good chance in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, like you said, they got their win at Norwich at the weekend, Man United, and they'll hope for their sake that they're starting to turn a little bit of a corner of that one, getting their first away win. But yeah, for Bournemouth, I think it's 4 without a win now, so they really need to start picking up the points. They've only had one home win all season as well. So in terms of the home performances, it'll be one that they'll look at and just got to go and try and tackle Man United, I think, and try and ask them a few questions, really. I think the biggest problem they went to Arsenal was the first half was the worst I've seen them play all season. They just gave them far too much respect and ended up losing 1-0, could have come away or something, but they didn't really approach it in the right sort of way, I don't think. So against Man United, I say a home game, it's what, like I say, the one that the fans still always really look at. And I think from the players now, they've been in the league for 5 years, I don't think they look at these games anymore as ones where they can't go and cause a bit of a problem. They've beaten most of them at some point, so they'll look at it as one where they can go and get all 3 points, and I fully expect a much improved performance on recent weeks. I think they'll be well up for it, and yeah, I think it's one that really could go either way, and if they can just get on top early on, I think they could really cause Man United 3 problems hopefully on Saturday.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Tom. That was Tom Crocker, sports reporter for the Bournemouth Echo. Obviously struggling to score goals in recent weeks, but you look at it the other way around and clean sheets were a real problem for Bournemouth last season. They've got 2 in succession, granted not against necessarily the hardest of opponents, against Norwich and Watford, who are both in the bottom 3, but a big game for Bournemouth on the weekend at home to United, and even though it's a small crowd at the Vitality, I'm sure that they will get up for that game, and one that I think Bournemouth will get at least a point from, if not all 3. If you've got a view on that, call us on 0208 7020 558. How are Bournemouth doing? Could Eddie Howe in the very near future make a step up to one of the bigger Premier League clubs, or do you think this is his level? The number again, 0208 7020 558. We're going to continue talking all things Premier League and a bit about the Carabao Cup as well. And we might even talk a little bit about Manchester United next.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. One of the sides involved in Carabao Cup action tomorrow night away at Chelsea is our Manchester United. And I'm delighted to say we're joined by Dominic Booth, Manchester United writer for the Manchester Evening News. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Dominic. Back to last weekend and a 3-1 away win at Carrow Road, which put to an end an awful away run since Ole Gunnar Solskjaer took the job permanently. From your perspective, does this feel like a breakthrough moment for Manchester United in terms of their away form, that not just winning the game, but the manner of it, that realistically United probably should have won it even more comfortably?
Yeah, hi Kieran. Yeah, I think it was important for the performance as much as the result, really. And it was arguably United's best performance of the season. Now, I know it's only against Norwich, but you know, we've seen they made Man City come unstuck a few weeks ago, and they're obviously no slouches in terms of their possession. So I think United will be desperate to continue a little bit of momentum. You know, they could get a third consecutive away win after failing to get an away win of any kind for, I think it was 232 days. So it does sort of feel like things maybe could be on the turn for United and Solskjaer.
One man who made or who kind of had a breakthrough performance on Sunday was Anthony Martial. He's obviously spent quite a lot of this season injured, but he was a key part of that team on Sunday. How integral a part of this side, and does kind of the statistics kind of show it that when Martial is playing, United are a much better side. They score a lot more goals. They get a lot more points. Could you arguably say Martial at the moment is maybe Manchester United's most important player?
Well, he looks it because of how he affects the team in terms of other people's positions. He came back in and Marcus Rashford all of a sudden could play where he has been more dangerous really for United on the left-hand side, cutting in and dovetailing with Martial nicely. It meant that Andreas Pereira, who's been playing as a right winger of sorts, which is not his position at all, he can move into a more of a central attacking midfield position. And Daniel James can play on the right, where he's looked quite dangerous recently. So it's almost like the transformative effect he can have on other people, as much as obviously his own ability, which is, when he's on his game, there are very few better in the Premier League than Martial. His relationship with Rashford's going to be, I think, the key to United continuing this improvement and continuing to maintain a threat, obviously, in terms of goal scoring.
I think it was the first time in Premier League history that two players had scored a goal and missed a penalty in the same game. Both Rashford and Martial missed a penalty, and there's already been a lot of discussion about United's penalty takers this season. Where does Ole Gunnar Solskjaer go from here? Who is now the designated penalty taker? Because it seemingly was Rashford, then it's been Pogba, now it seems he's gone to Martial, but all of them have now missed penalties. So where do United go with their penalty takers?
Well, that's a million-dollar question, Kieran. I think this is one for them to work out in the training field, a good old-fashioned shootout after a training session. I think Rashford is the most natural penalty taker probably in the team, but he doesn't seem to have the confidence at the moment. Like you say, he's had a couple of misses already this season. Probably Pogba, when he's back fit, will be the penalty taker, but we're not going to see him for probably another month. So I would think he'll probably keep alternating until he can find someone who can hit the back of the net.
One of those guys that has missed a penalty this season, Paul Pogba, isn't expected to play again until December because of an ankle injury that he picked up back in September. How does that now affect Manchester United's midfield in terms of the onus on other players to step up? And realistically, how big a blow is it for Manchester United? Because Paul Pogba does get a lot of criticism and tends to play well once, maybe in 10 games. So is it that big a miss for United not having Pogba available for the next 6-7 weeks?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because of how inconsistent Pogba can be. There are obviously going to be moments in games and, a half here or there where Pogba would have turned it on if he'd been playing, because that's the kind of player that he is. And United do have some games where they may struggle to break down resolute teams coming up, I think. They face Brighton and Sheffield United, Villa, possibly all games that Pogba will miss after they face Bournemouth at the weekend. So I think they're going to miss his ability to pick that lock, to unpack a defence which are putting men behind the ball. And the onus is on a player who we haven't seen any consistency from in Fred to come and replace him. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets on.
What do you make of Fred? Because obviously he was signed for around £50 million. Manchester City was supposedly interested in him at the same sort of time, were very interested actually, and potentially close to a deal. He was kind of thrown into the deep end straight away, had a poor first season. A lot of people don't seem to rate him particularly highly, but do you think we're starting to see him come into his own, prove a little bit why Manchester United invest that much money in him, or is this a player that is seemingly just kind of drift over the next 6-12 months and eventually be sold at quite a significant loss?
Well, United can't afford to sell him at the moment, that's for sure. Unless they significantly bolster their midfield ranks until probably next summer, given how tough the January market can be. They have a midfield of Fred and Scott McTominay and obviously Paul Pogba if he's fit, and very little aside from that. So it's a case of necessity for United that Fred has to improve. I do get the sense that the penny's starting to drop with Fred, and that he's just finding that little bit more consistency. He's not
panicking so much on the ball. He's not giving it away so cheaply. So, yeah, I'm hopeful that that Fred can continue what has been on the last couple of games, a slightly upward curve.
Tomorrow night, then, in the Carabao Cup, United make the trip to Chelsea. Before kind of talking about team selection, how frustrating is it for, I mean, you think about United fans in that game and then also in the other big tie tomorrow night, Liverpool against Arsenal, the Arsenal fans coming from London, effectively kind of the opposite way to the northwest. How ridiculous is it that, for example, this kickoff tomorrow night in that game at Stamford Bridge is 8:05? It just seems to me like it is all dedicated towards the TV audience and there is no kind of regard that's thought of for any of the fans.
Well, this is something we've had to get used to, unfortunately, isn't it, recently? Since the television companies have taken over, they control so much of where the money goes in football. So this really shouldn't surprise us, unfortunately. Although, you know, it is tough for away fans. It always has been, really, in a way. It's never really been made particularly easy for away fans. And in recent years, that's just exacerbated. Someone probably will make the joke that United have a lot of fans in London anyway, so it doesn't particularly matter. But, yeah, unfortunately, there's not much we can do about that.
In terms of then team selection for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer tomorrow night, how, in your view, how does he approach team selection? Because there'll be some fans that will say that they don't really care about the Carabao Cup. It's only the League Cup. It's kind of the lowest on the priority list. And so you send a bunch of youngsters there and hope that they come through, but not devastated if they don't get through? Or do you go the other way and say United's form hasn't been good, they've had a poor start to the season, they need to get a bit of momentum, and actually by playing a strong side and potentially winning, it gains momentum and confidence that Manchester United so badly need?
Yeah, well, there's no doubt Solskjaer does need to make some changes. But you're right, it's a tricky balancing act for United, because obviously they'd love to continue that momentum that they've picked up of late. There are clearly players who need a rest. I think Rashford and Maguire are certainly among them. And you'll probably leave David De Gea, Daniel James, probably on the bench. They've played a lot of football recently. Fred might get a rest because he's needed in the Premier League at the moment. And then we could see the likes of Brandon Williams and James Garner, youngsters who have impressed lately. And Solskjaer, he will say, listen, I've got every faith in these youngsters. I don't view this too much as a weakened side, and I am still, you know, really going for it in the Carabao Cup. So, you know, I think a young United team, a young Chelsea team probably as well, looking at it from their perspective, will definitely line up at Stamford Bridge on Wednesday.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Dom. That was Dominic Booth, Manchester United writer for the Manchester Evening News, talking about Paul Pogba's injury. How much does that affect United? How integral a part of the United team is Anthony Martial? How much does he bring the players around him into the game? And also looking ahead to tomorrow night's game, how does Ole Gunnar Solskjaer approach team selection? If you want to share your views on that, call us on 0208 70 2558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number to give your views on that. A reminder of all the Carabao Cup fixtures tonight. There are five of them and then a number more tomorrow night, including Liverpool, Arsenal and Chelsea, Manchester United. Burton take on Leicester, Crawley are at home against Colchester, Everton play Watford in the Marco Silva derby, or the Snake derby, depending on which way you want to put it. Manchester City play Southampton hoping not to be spanked yet again tonight as they play City twice in a matter of days. And then Oxford United take on Sunderland in the Carabao Cup, fourth round tonight. A couple of the other stories, obviously the fallout continues from Arsenal's game against Crystal Palace. Does Granit Xhaka, one, have a future as the Arsenal captain? Two, does he have a future at Arsenal going forward? Charlie Nicholas believes that he has no future at Arsenal. Paul Merson had a slightly different view that in the heat of the moment, he'll probably regret doing what he did as the captain, but at least he cares and has some criticism for the fans. Also a blow for Liverpool fans out there. Joel Matip is set to miss the next 6 weeks with an ongoing knee injury. The club aren't going to rush him back. They're going to give him time. Obviously, an international break is coming up in November, but Matip could miss the next 10 games, including, as we were talking about with Ian Cheeseman from Manchester City earlier in the show, obviously that big game at Anfield in a couple of weeks' time, Liverpool against Manchester City. So a blow for Liverpool to lose Joel Matip, but hopefully it means Joe Gomez will be given the opportunity to come back in the side alongside Virgil van Dijk.
This is Love Sport.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.